Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be here. It does kind of feel like we're the remnant. There are actually more people here than I thought there would be, so that's nice. Today, we're continuing talking about Luke. We're going to be reading the passage about the 10 lepers. I'll usually start whenever I'm asked to speak, whenever I'm thinking about a Bible passage. I read it, I mull it over a little bit, I read it a bit more, and then I go to our good friend Google, because it's just good fun if you want to pass an hour to see what the crazy people on the internet think about it. So I do that, to be honest, not because it's going to be helpful, but just because it's entertainment. And what I learned about this passage from Google was that it is the favourite for Sunday school crafts everywhere, because it's about saying thank you, which we really want our toddlers to do. It's about healing, so that's good for them to learn, and they learn how to count to 10. So it's just a win. But even as I was thinking about that, I just felt like it is actually quite simple, this passage, but I have been very challenged about how, like, everything with Jesus is very, very simple, and if we learn how to do it, then it's very, very powerful. And also, as we're working out how to do it, we realize along the way that it's not usually as simple. Like, it is simple to learn, and also very complicated to do it day in, day out, forever. So we're going to read, Luke, this is a new clicker, so, oh, see, there's a green light. So we're in Luke chapter 17, verses 11 to 19. And it says, "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus travelled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.' When he saw them, he said, 'Go, show yourselves to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, 'Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?' Then he said to him, 'Rise and go, your faith has made you well.'" So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. It said back at the start, and back in Luke chapter 9, it says in verse 51, Jesus set his face to Jerusalem, or he resolutely set out for Jerusalem. So from Luke chapter 9 up to here, and for all the chapters that are to come before he gets to Jerusalem, that's where he's going. And every time I think about that, it just messes with my brain in a good way, because he's going to the cross. He has got this giant mission about what God's called him to do. He is speaking to his people. He's inviting them into relationship. He's demonstrating the kingdom. And the entire way, there's this huge purpose. And he's got big picture stuff. But when he comes across need, he always responds with compassion and mercy. And I think of me. If I had set my face to Jerusalem, I would be preoccupied with that. That would be the purpose. I would be all about that. And if I bumped into people along the way, I don't know if they'd get mercy, because I'd be too busy doing the really important thing that God had asked me to do. The cry for mercy from Jesus is answered, and the answer isn't, "I've got a really important job to do in Jerusalem, so I'm going to keep going." He is never too busy. He has mercy and compassion. He will always be interrupted by someone who needs him. My children are 4. My baby turned 4 on Friday, so they're 4, 6, and 7. And they have a lot of demands, right? Kind of like me, whenever I go before my Heavenly Father. In fact, there's a line from a poem that I read years ago that says, "Lord, give me patience when little hands come at me with small, ceaseless demands." And that's how it feels. Like, "Mummy, can I paint a brick? Mummy, my head's itchy, but I don't want to scratch it. Mummy..." Like, one of them was, Esther came in at 3:30 in the morning and stood beside my bed. And I said, "Essie, why are you out of bed?" And she went, "I don't know." It's like, "Well, all right, go back to bed." So there's this constant stream of lovely little demands. And that's what being a parent's about. And I want them to come to me with it. And a couple of weeks ago in our life group, my 6-year-old wandered in. And I was expecting Mummy, what do you think the Queen's favourite colour is? Or, Mummy, why is the sun yellow? I mean, I don't know. Esther, go to bed. And actually, she came in and she walked straight over to me in the room full of people and she said, Mummy, I can't find Sophie, right? Sophie is her tiny giraffe, beyond stinky comforter toy that she's had since before she was born. We bought it for her when I was pregnant. And Esther can't go to sleep without Sophie. She's a very precious giraffe. She gets lost quite a lot, so it is a bit frustrating. But Essie can't sleep without Sophie, and she will not be okay until wee Sophie's tucked up with her. So she walked into Life Group and she said, Mummy, I can't find Sophie. And so I got up and left, and we went and found Sophie. And as I came back down the stairs, I felt the Lord speak to me that, Kathleen, that's how fast I go whenever you need me. Like, you didn't say, Esther, you know, I'm really busy, off you go. You knew your six-year-old could not fix this by herself. You knew she would not be okay without her precious little stinky giraffe. So you went fast. And I just felt and be like, Kathleen, I will listen to your conversations with me about why the sun's yellow and why your head's itchy and you don't want to scratch it and all that stuff. But when you need to feel safe and you're lost and you've lost your little Sophie, I'll move really, really, really fast. And I think this is what Jesus is doing here. Someone calls out for mercy and he's not preoccupied with the big thing. He always responds really fast. And he's just better than any parent could ever be. So when we need help, he's going to help us. So he's going to talk about leprosy. So he's going into a town and there are lepers who are standing at a distance because that's the rules. And in Leviticus chapter 13 and 14, there are lots and lots of rules about infectious skin conditions. So to let the priests tell which were acute and which were chronic, some conditions are automatically unclean. Some you need to go into quarantine for 7 days, and then they check if the patch on your skin's got bigger, and then they decide what to do about it. But when the Bible talks about leprosy, it can cover a range of skin conditions. So whenever I read leprosy, I think the disease that we know about that's caused by a mycobacterium and it has all these symptoms and signs. Actually, the word in Hebrew and Greek, they're simple, they're not specific, they're imprecise, and it's pretty much a range of infectious skin conditions. So we don't know maybe what the 10 lepers had, whether they had leprosy caused by a mycobacterium or a different type of skin condition. In some ways, it doesn't really matter. They just had to live apart. They're unclean. And if you were deemed unclean, I find it hard to read this bit without wanting to cry, because it's just... Anyway, if you were deemed unclean with a skin condition, then you had to wear torn clothes, you had to have unkept hair, and you had to cry out unclean if people came near. And as long as the infection remains, you're unclean and you live outside the camp, far away from people. And the priests had a role in ceremonially cleansing people. So some skin conditions get better on their own. They like spontaneously resolve, or the infection settles down and the patch on your skin will shrink. And if that happens, then you can present yourself to the priest. And there's this big, long process over 8 days involving birds and sacrifices. And then you can be declared to be clean again and you can come back in the community. It's not even like you can wander back in. It's not like you're unclean and then when you get better, you can just wander back home again. There's a big, long process about how you can be declared clean. And you don't go to the temple to be made well again. If you have a skin condition, that's it. But if it gets better itself, then the priests can cleanse you and let you back in. The other thing about leprosy was that it's not just not purely a health thing. Although in a time before antibiotics and hospitals and all the rest, the idea of quarantining people with infection makes sense to prevent plagues and stuff like that. But there's a spiritual aspect to it too. So leprosy in the Old Testament is sometimes linked to sin. Moses' sister Miriam, at one point, Miriam and Aaron, Moses' brother and sister, get a bit grumpy that he's the one in charge. And they say, well, we know stuff too. Why don't we get to be the boss? Why don't you listen to us? But the problem is that God had anointed Moses to lead, not them. So they're defying God, and he punishes Miriam with leprosy, and she has to live outside the camp for 7 days. So why am I telling you that? The reason is that there's just this link between leprosy and sin. And it's not like a direct link whereby it's always the same thing, but there is this link. So there will have been people with leprosy who didn't have it because they were being punished for sin. Okay? In another place in the Bible, with the man who's blind, Jesus is asked who sinned, was it this guy or his parents? And Jesus says it was neither. So it's not as simple as these 10 lepers must have done something wrong. But there is this really powerful link between what looks like a marring of our physical bodies in terms of an infectious skin disease and what is happening to humanity on the inside. So the defilement that happened and went around clean and unclean is a pointer to the sin of human beings in general, and that's the point. God is holy, and because of that, anything that is imperfect, whether it's clothes, I mean, if you read the Old Testament laws, some of them seem bizarre to us, but clothes, animals, people's skin, houses, there's always a distance between us and God that is caused by uncleanliness, and only he can deal with it. And we find this really hard because our modern minds will say, if I have a tiny patch of psoriasis, it's not fair that I would be kept separate. Like, that doesn't seem fair. But we just think about it backwards. We start with us and what degrees of cleanliness and uncleanliness are okay. But God is the beginning and end of all things. We start with him, and he's absolutely perfect. So compared to that, like, that's the marker. There's absolute perfection in him and absolute cleanliness. So for me, the challenge is that I need to get my proud mind around the idea that I'm actually just not okay without Jesus, that I'm not good enough, that everything, my body, soul, and spirit, is marred beyond repair without Jesus. So it is common today to hear Christians talk of their brokenness, but when you listen closely, it is clear that they are talking about their wounds, the things they have suffered, not of the evil that is in them. Few today have discovered that they have been disastrously wrong and that they cannot change or accept or escape the consequences of it on their own. So to me, that's what I've been pondering about this week, that it's me, that without Jesus, we're unclean and we're cut off from hope and community. So they cry out to him, Master, okay? They call for mercy and they say, Master, and this is a term that Luke uses that the other Gospels don't use. The other Gospels call Jesus Rabbi or Teacher, and Luke uses Master. Maybe because it's a more generic term. So Luke's writing to Gentiles, so they would understand a more generic term like Master. It's maybe also because it's a term of authority, like they're calling out to him because he is the one who has authority over them. They have to keep their distance because they have leprosy, but they're also desperate for healing and restoration, and they cry out to the one who has authority over them to do something about it. That's really brave. When we are stuck in uncleanness or in pain of things people have done against us or in sickness or in sin, we want to hide often. I don't know if I'd have been brave enough to cry out for mercy. Actually, to be honest, maybe the reason why I wouldn't have cried out is because I wouldn't have wanted to risk being disappointed. Sometimes we don't want to cry for mercy because what if mercy doesn't come? But again and again in the Gospels, we see people who cry out for mercy and Jesus responds and he's interrupted and he always has time for them. And it's like when my six-year-old comes into me because she can't sleep without her snot-covered stink rag, Sophie, and I go really fast because my baby girl needs it. And when we need mercy and we cry out to him, he moves really fast. He comes to rescue us. And I felt as I was thinking about this that actually there are some of us here and it's just too hard. Like, we've cried out for mercy so many times and we actually can't do it anymore because it does not feel like mercy has come, and it feels like we've asked and asked and asked and we can't come again. And I felt if that is you and you can't cry out again because it just mercy hasn't come so far and rescue hasn't come, then that's what we're all here for. That's why you're in community, because if you can't do it, there's grace for that, and we are to be a means of grace to each other, and we are to cry out mercy on your behalf and hold up your arms for you. So if you can't cry for mercy anymore because it's just been too long, then please will you get people around you who'll do it for you? And we'll wait for Jesus to come together. So Jesus hears and he sends them to the priest, and on the way they're cleansed. And then as they're going, one of them notices that he's well again and he comes back. And then the focus of the story, like the second half of the verses, are all about the response to the healing. So it's all about Jesus asking, where did they go? Why are the others not here? And the praise and thanks that the Samaritan gives. And the thing I find really funny about this is that the focus on it is the response. That's the bit that jumps out. That's the bit you talk about, that the Samaritan came back and said, thank you. And the reason I find it really funny is because it's almost like the healing is incidental. Like, of course, they're going to be healed. That's not even the point. That's a given. That's the introduction, is that, of course, leprosy gets healed in the presence of Jesus. Of course, sickness gets healed. And I just found that really encouraging this week to think, well, of course, and that is the point, but it's almost not even the point, because that's the given in the kingdom of God. The thing that's noteworthy is how people respond to the mercy of God, because, of course, people are going to be healed. So the Samaritan comes back to give thanks and praise, which is interesting because he is a Samaritan, so he's a despised foreigner. And it's not quite as simple as there's rivalry between two different ethnic groups, although that's part of it. It is more that this is a religious thing. So it's more that there's a deep religious conviction in the Jews that the Samaritans are wrong and unholy and they defile the name of God. So this is a really big deal. This is about God's name and who he is. And we saw this in the parable of the Good Samaritan, that Jesus deliberately chose a Samaritan to have mercy on the person who gets robbed, to show that the new covenant is for all people, and those who are on the outside are going to be welcomed in. And those who think that they're on the inside can actually be really far away in their hearts. But the point about this parable is that it's not a parable. This isn't Jesus making a point in his teaching. This is what's actually happening. So Samaritans are actually coming and worshipping Jesus. After he dies and his resurrection, he sends the disciples to Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the world, because that's where the gospel is going to go. But the funny thing is that it leaks in even before his death and resurrection, is that Samaritans are already coming to Jesus, and the nations are going to come, and the kingdom is going to extend beyond the lines of nationality. And Jesus says, where are the other nine? So it's this idea that those who should have recognized him are missing it, which I find funny because he did tell them to go to the temple. And this Samaritan comes back and says, thank you. That's the appropriate response in the light of what has happened. Of course, healings are going to happen. And of course, God's goodness is going to be seen in the land of the living. Do we respond with thankfulness when it does? Often on thankfulness, actually, this is something I don't do very well, because my brain has about 100 million thoughts simultaneously. So one bit of my brain will be saying, God, I am very thankful for this. And the other half of my brain is going, although, or but God. It's like, I'm very thankful for this, but. And I find it really hard to not have those little buts in the back of my mind of, actually, but God, what about this? So I'm thankful, but. And I say to myself, this to myself with mercy and grace, but like, I'm very convicted about this over the last few weeks. That wee voice, it has to die. Like, I'm going after it because I'm done with it. There cannot be any more but gods anymore. Like, it just has to be wholehearted thankfulness. And I can wrestle my pain out before him, and I can go to him with places where I'm stuck. There's space for that, and there is mercy for it. What I'm talking about, it's almost like a little bit of my heart that I keep held apart, where I'm like, I'm thankful with 95% of me, God, but this bit you haven't dealt with yet, so I'm holding back. And I don't want to hold back anymore. I just want to be wholeheartedly thankful. So for me, what I'm working on is I'm working on thinking of it as an offering, that I will give him thanks as an offering. And I'm not even listing things I'm thankful for anymore, because if I was to write down three things I'm thankful for in my circumstances, my wee brain will have a field day with three things I'm not thankful for. And hopefully one day when I'm holier and more like Jesus, that won't happen, because I'm working on it. But that's just where I'm at the moment. So for me, I'm not listing things I'm thankful for in my circumstances, although there are many things I could be thankful for in my circumstances. I'm actually just going and giving him thanks like an offering, because I owe him my thanks, because we're just to be a thankful people. Like, that is just who we are. There's a verse in John that says, from the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. And I've been reading in a few different places about this over the last few months. And another one blessing after another could be translated grace upon grace. or grace after grace. So we've all received grace after grace. And I love that because it sounds like waves on a beach. And I just imagine standing on the beach with my toes in the water and having like waves of grace upon grace pouring over me. So we just live under grace and we give a thanks offering. And I have so many things to be thankful for in my circumstances. But actually it's deeper than that, because at my core I just am thankful and I give him my thanks. So often I thought that that was it with the story of the Samaritan, that he was healed and he was thankful. But I think that there's more. And the thing I've been thinking about loads was the fact that Jesus sent him to the temple and then he comes back to Jesus. So the temple is the place where God lives on the earth. Okay, I'm going to have a wee drink. So for the Jews, the temple is a physical place where you would go to meet with God. So we need to get our heads around this, because we live in a time where we can meet with God anywhere, where he's always there, where he's always present, where he's poured out his spirit, so we can gather in his presence wherever we are. But back in the Old Testament, at the time of Jesus, it's like God had an address. So it's like if I wanted to go to someone's house, I would look up their address and I would go there and that's where they'd be, because that's where they live. And here, they're sent to the temple because that's where God lives. So if you want to go and meet with the God of heaven and earth and do business with him, you physically walk to an actual place. And from the time of Jesus onwards, the temple is obsolete as it stands. Jesus says that he's going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. And he was talking about himself. So he's going to be the temple. Jesus is the place of God's presence on the earth. And I just love this, maybe because I'm a little bit obsessed about Old Testament fulfillment and the New Testament, but I just have been, this has been the thing that has captured my heart over the last few weeks, this idea that he is the temple where we go to meet with God. Jesus believed himself to be called to speak and act as if he were the replacement for the temple and all it stood for. Jesus dispensed cleansing, forgiveness, and the restoration of Israel as though it was his own to give. So in Jesus, one greater than the temple is here, because God's presence is more manifest in Jesus than it ever was in the Old Testament temple. And it is partly because in the temple, that's where you went to give sacrifices to deal with sin. So it's partly that Jesus is going to do that and be a once-for-all sacrifice. But actually, it's bigger than that. The thing that, it's like the fact God had an address and you got to go somewhere to see the God of the universe. And now that's fulfilled in Jesus. So he is now, yes, the temple is the unique place on earth where God's revelatory presence is located. And God is manifesting his glorious presence in Jesus in a greater way than it was ever manifested in a physical temple structure. So it's actually not just about coming back to say thank you, although it is partly that, like it's partly about gratitude. But it's also an honouring that there's a place where you go to present yourself before the Lord of heaven and earth. And it used to be a building, and now it's a person, Jesus. The temple had a range of functions, and part of it was dealing with corporate sin and individual sin and cleanliness and uncleanliness, and that's what we think of, but that wasn't the point of the temple. All of that was there to fulfill, to allow people to come close to God. Okay, it was so that people could stay near, and as his mark that these were his people and he dwelt in their midst. So the temple and the tabernacle tent before it when they wandered around in the desert, it was establishing the theocracy and honour of the king in the middle of his people. And because he's so holy and perfect, because of that, then there had to be all the sacrifices so that a fallen humanity could ever come close to him. But the purpose of it was the relationship. The purpose of it was so that people could come close to God. And now Jesus sends 10 lepers to the temple, and one of them comes back, because the temple isn't a building anymore, it's a person, Jesus. And if we want to go and meet with the God of heaven and earth, we get to do that through Jesus. This is the bit of the story that's been I've been mulling over, actually, the idea of how they went to the temple and now I go to Jesus. Because a lot of my prayers are, but God. Because Nathan and I, my husband and I, are currently in the middle of waiting. We've been waiting for a long time for news about jobs and houses and, you know, things like that. So a lot of my prayers are venting frustration before the Lord and, but God. But God, when are you going to move? When are you going to do this? And this week, I felt a very firm reminder that that's all well and good, but I actually just need to park it. Like, I just owe him thanks, and I owe him honour, and it boils down to obedience. So I've been imagining myself, if I lived in the time of the physical temple, I would have walked to a temple to meet with God. I would have got up in the morning and got ready and prepared my heart because I was going to the place where God was, and I would have gone to the temple and carried something there or bought something in the outer courts for sacrifice. Actually, I'm a woman, so there would have been a limit to how far I could have gone, but you would have physically gone to a physical place. You would have physically carried something as a picture that you were dealing with things in the presence of God. There were offerings to say thanks. There were offerings of praise. There were sin and guilt offerings. And I have been thinking about that with me, that I need to remember that I actually have like the privilege of going to the presence of God. Like, that's an honour and a privilege that we should never overlook, that we actually are allowed to go into his presence, and we choose to go there. Like, we choose to walk there or sit down and enter his presence. And we also get to pick what we're going to carry into his presence and what we're going to leave there. Honour and thankfulness boils down in my heart to whether I walk in obedience before God. And all my questions and delights and disappointments and excitement and ranting about when he's going to let me know what the plan is, I just felt that this week he reminded me that all of that, it finishes at the feet of Jesus with honour and thankfulness. This leper was healed, the one who came back. So his whole life is different. Like, he's an outcast. And now the kingdom of God has come powerfully in his life so he can come near. And that's amazing. And sometimes we think, well, if that happened to me, then of course I'd be thankful. Of course I'd be grateful if Jesus moved miraculously in my life. And we would. But actually, the invitation for all of us is, even if we're still waiting, even if we're still wrestling with all the but Gods, we just still find ourselves at the feet of Jesus with gratitude and giving him honour, because he is the place we go to meet with the Lord. And it is a delight to be allowed to do that, to be allowed to go into his presence. So the Samaritan comes back to offer thanks and praise. Right. This is the bit that I go down rabbit trails whenever I prepare to teach. And some of them just take me off piste a little bit. This is the one I've been mulling over. Why did Jesus send a Samaritan to the temple? Because the Samaritans and the Jews both have their own temple. So there's a temple in Jerusalem that the Jews have, and then the Samaritans have a temple on Mount Gerizim. And I don't think Jesus is sending them to two separate places. So I don't think he's saying to the Samaritan, you go to your temple, you Jews go to your temple. Jesus is sending them all to the temple in Jerusalem. But like, what on earth is the Samaritan thinking as he goes to the temple in Jerusalem? Because he is not welcome there. There is no cleanliness for him in the Jewish temple. I mean, well, depending on the priest and how they reacted, but just think, he has a skin condition that's been made clean, but he's a Samaritan. So can he ever really be clean in the temple system anyway, because of the animosity and all the stuff that had gone on between them? So he's a Samaritan going to the temple, and he comes back when he realizes that he's been healed, because he wants to give thanks and praise, and because one greater than the temple is here, but also because I don't think he would have been welcome in the Jewish temple anyway. I don't think there would have been a place for him necessarily, but there is with Jesus, because he's the fulfillment of it all and he's greater than the temple that's gone before him. Earlier in the gospel, Jesus bumps into a Samaritan woman, and she asks him about this whole thing about the Jewish temple and the Samaritan's temple and what's the deal with that, and he refuses to get sucked into a debate over what he thinks about that. He says, a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. And this miraculous story in Luke, when a leper is healed, we see that beginning to happen, because a Samaritan leper is sent to the temple and he comes to Jesus to worship the Father in spirit and in truth. He comes back and praises God and gives thanks and honour. It's the fitting response to Jesus, and it's our delight to do that. I used to read this story a bit like saying thank you whenever you get given a biscuit, right? You know the way you teach toddlers to say ta-ta and then they get a biscuit? And it's almost like a learned response in the opposite way. Like, We were out for ice cream this week, and my four-year-old had a delightful pink ice cream, and a one-year-old walked past that we didn't know, and he looked up at her, and he smiled, and he said, ta-ta, and he opened his mouth. And it was very funny because, like, my Cleo would not be sharing her ice cream with anybody, so she did not. And then the mummy showed up and she lifted her son. But I think I probably have read this in the past and thought that it's a story about manners. It's about saying thank you to be polite. And it's not about manners. It's about appropriate gratitude in the face of what's been done for us. And it's about honour and praise to Jesus because of who he is. It's the only way that the Samaritan could respond in light of what had been done for him. And at the end, Jesus tells him that your faith has made you well. And the word for well is sozo, which means rescued from danger and healed and divine salvation. And there's loads and loads of stuff all tied up in this word, made well. So all the other 9 lepers are cleansed. Their skin condition is dealt with. But the one who honours Jesus gets full wholeness and full deeper healing. So when we come to the place where Jesus is worthy of honour and we find ourselves at his feet with thankfulness and praise, then we do get our skin lesions dealt with and we get our uncleanness dealt with so we can come close. But we also get full rescue and full healing, body, soul and spirit. But the focus isn't on us. The Samaritan didn't come back to get more from Jesus. He came back because he owed Jesus thanks and honour, and he wanted to do that, and he wanted to give praise. And when Jesus is honoured and thanked, then the kingdom comes in the lives of those around him even more. And Jesus says, you say, your faith has made you well. So faith has a role in this, but it's not like intellectual assent, like if I can make myself believe enough. Like a petrol gauge on a car, whereby there's a line where suddenly if you reach it, a wee light goes on, and ding, there's enough faith, and then the Lord moves. I don't think that's how it works. It's actually apparently hard to render the word properly into English. I find it hard to say that with a straight face, purely because I don't know very much about translating Greek into English, but the books I have read say that it's hard to render the word faith properly into English. But apparently, it's more like believing allegiance, faithful allegiance, or trusting loyalty. So it's closer to the Old Testament sense of loving God, this idea that faith means walking in obedience to him. So it's not that magical petrol gauge of belief that if I can hypothetically believe enough, then ding, the light will come on. It's just that we walk in obedience to God. Faith is a belief in action kind of word, and it's more about loyalty to Jesus than an intellectual conviction that a miracle is maybe possible. And it just leads us to the fact that what makes us well and what saves us is Jesus. And thanking him and pouring out honour and praise at his feet is the appropriate response to that. Psalm 50 verse 23 says, he who sacrifices thank offerings honours me, and he prepares the way so that I may show him the salvation of God. I just love that. I just think it's amazing. This leper, the Samaritan leper, got the full salvation of God. He was made well, not just clean again. And one of the ways that happens is as we honour Jesus and sacrifice thank offerings. I think the other 9 lepers will have been really chuffed. Like, they were far away and excluded, and they're healed and get to come close. So they got miraculous healing. They'll have been delighted. Like, that's no small thing. It's the mercy of God breaking in their lives. But they did miss Jesus in the middle of it all. They missed honouring him. He is really merciful, and sometimes we really need miraculous healing. But in all of that, I don't want to miss seeing the salvation of God, and it's broader than what we could ever ask or imagine. There's a full restoration of who we are and who we're made to be as we honour Jesus and pour out our thanks to him. And the really fun bit is, because he's the fulfilment of the temple, it's like we get to go and meet with God. And I think because I grew up with that, like, well, of course I do. Of course his spirit's everywhere. Of course I do. This week I realised how that had become like a small thing. Like, well, of course I get to meet with God. And this week I've realised that it is not a small thing that he lets us near and that he invites us near and that he wants us to be near and that we can actually go into the presence of the creator of heaven and earth. I've been a little bit blown away by that this week. And when we find ourselves there, when we go to the feet of Jesus, then the response is thankfulness and honour. That is all I really wanted to say. So what I felt was, I'll tell you what I think and then I'll pray for you, but what I felt was for some of us there's a lot of but gods. So we're stuck and we feel far away, or we really need mercy but we've asked a lot and it hasn't come. And we're stuck with but God. And there's a bit of our heart that's in, but actually a lot of us is like, this is too hard and I'm really stuck, and but God, all this is really unfair. And I felt like today there's an invitation in the way you would have physically gone to the temple and physically carried something or brought a sacrifice, that today we get to walk into his presence and lay it at his feet as an offering of thanks and honour. And I think there is a grace. I felt like, for me, it's like all my places of ingratitude or I'm struggling, they look solid. Like they look like this is a big thing. These are solid things. But in the presence of Jesus, it's like it crumbles like dust. And that's what I felt like. I felt like all those things we feel are hard and we're carrying and there's bitterness or anger or frustration. When we come into the presence of Jesus, they literally crumble like dust as we give him thanks and honor. So if there are things that you need to carry into his presence, then some of the prayer ministry team would love to pray with you and you get to meet with God. Not because he's here in particular, because actually he's everywhere, but it's really powerful to have someone pray with you and invite you and welcome you and all that. So if that's you, the prayer ministry team would love to pray for you. Also, of course, leprosy is healed in the presence of Jesus. Like, of course it is. So if you're sick, then we would love to pray for you, because disease bows the knee to Jesus. So could you stand and I'll pray for us. And then if you would like prayer from the prayer ministry team, they would love to pray for you. Yeah. So Jesus, we thank you that you're the one worthy of honour. Thank you that we get to go and meet with you. Thank you that we are invited into the presence of the Lord of heaven and earth. Yeah. So God, we pray that we would be changed in your presence today. We would go away having met with you, and that we would see the salvation of God. In Jesus' name.
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.